Chapter 3. What did he die of? I said I didn't know. How long has he been dead? It seemed judicious to enlarge the facts to fit the probabilities, so I said, 2 or 3 days. But it did no good, for Thompson received it with an injured look which plainly said, 2 or 3 years, you mean? Then he went right along, placidly ignoring my statement, and gave his views at considerable length upon the unwisdom of putting off burials too long. Then he lounged off toward the box, stood a moment, then came back on a sharp trot, and visited the broken pane, observing, 'Twould a been a dumb sight better, all around, if they'd started him along last summer.' Thompson sat down, and buried his face in his red silk handkerchief, and began to slowly sway, and rock his body like one who is doing his best to endure the almost unendurable. By this time the fragrance, if you may call it fragrance, was just about suffocating, as near as you can come at it. Thompson's face was turning gray. I knew mine hadn't any color left in it. By and by Thompson rested his forehead in his left hand, with his elbow on his knee, and sort of waved his red handkerchief towards the box with his other hand, and said, I've carried a many a one of 'em, some of 'em considerable overdue too. But, lordy, he just lays over 'em all, and does it easy cap. They was heliotrope to him. This recognition of my poor friend gratified me, in spite of the sad circumstances, because it had so much the sound of a compliment. Pretty soon it was plain that something had got to be done. I suggested cigars. Thompson thought it was a good idea. He said, likely it'll modify him some. We puffed gingerly along for a while, and tried hard to imagine that things were improved. But it wasn't any use. Before very long, and without any consultation, both cigars were quietly dropped from our nerveless fingers at the same moment. Thompson said, with a sigh, no, Cap. It don't modify him worth a cent. Fact is, it makes him worse, because it appears to stir up his ambition. What do you reckon we better do now? I was not able to suggest anything. Indeed, I had to be swallowing and swallowing all the time, and did not like to trust myself to speak. Thompson fell to maundering, in a desultory and low-spirited way, about the miserable experiences of this night, and he got to referring to my poor friend by various titles, sometimes military ones, sometimes civil ones. And I noticed that as fast as my poor friend's effectiveness grew, Thompson promoted him accordingly, gave him a bigger title. Finally he said, I've got an idea. Suppose then we buckle down to it, and give the colonel a bit of a shove towards t'other end of the car? About 10 foot, say. He wouldn't have so much influence then, don't you reckon? I said it was a good scheme. So we took in a good fresh breath at the broken pane, calculating to hold it till we got through. Then we went there and bent over that deadly cheese, and took a grip on the box. Thompson nodded, LL ready, and then we threw ourselves forward with all our might. But Thompson slipped, and slumped down with his nose on the cheese, and his breath got loose. He gagged and gasped, and floundered up, and made a break for the door, pawing the air and saying hoarsely, don't hinder me. Gimme the road. I'm a dying. Gimme the road. Out on the cold platform I sat down, and held his head a while, and he revived. Presently he said, do you reckon we started the general any? I said no, we hadn't budged him. Well then, that idea's up the flume. We got to think up something else. He's suited where he is, I reckon. And if that's the way he feels about it, and has made up his mind, that he don't wish to be disturbed, you bet he's a-going to have his own way in the business. Yes, better leave him right where he is, long as he wants it so, because he holds all the trumps, don't you know, and so it stands to reason, that the man, that lays out to alter his plans for him is going to get left. But we couldn't stay out there in that mad storm. We should have frozen to death. So we went in again, and shut the door, and began to suffer once more, and take turns at the break in the window. By and by, as we were starting away from a station, where we had stopped a moment, Thompson pranced in cheerily, and exclaimed, "We're all right now. I reckon we've got the Commodore this time. I judge I've got the stuff here that'll take the tuck out of him." It was carbolic acid. He had a carboy of it. He sprinkled it all around everywhere. In fact, he drenched everything with it, rifle box, cheese and all. Then we sat down, feeling pretty hopeful. But it wasn't for long. You see, the two perfumes began to mix, and then, well, pretty soon we made a break for the door, and out there Thompson swabbed his face with his bandana, and said in a kind of disheartened way, "It ain't no use. We can't buck a gin him. He just utilizes everything we put up to modify him with, and gives it his own flavor, and plays it back on us. Why, Cap, don't you know, it's as much as 100 times worse in there now than it was when he first got a-going. I never did see one of them warm up to his work so, and take such a damnation interest in it. No, sir, I never did, as long as I've been on the road. And I've carried a many a one of them, as I was telling you." We went in again, after we were frozen pretty stiff. But my, we couldn't stay in now. So we just waltzed back and forth, freezing, and thawing, and stifling, by turns. In about an hour we stopped at another station, and as we left it Thompson came in with a bag, and said, "Cap, I'm a-going to chance him once more, just this once. And if we don't fetch him this time, the thing for us to do is to just throw up the sponge and withdraw from the canvas. That's the way I put it up." He had brought a lot of chicken feathers, and dried apples, and leaf tobacco, and rags, and old shoes, and sulfur, and asafoetida, and one thing or another, and he piled them on a breadth of sheet iron in the middle of the floor, and set fire to them. When they got well started, I couldn't see, myself, how even the corpse could stand it. All that went before was just simply poetry to that smell, but mind you, the original smell stood up out of it just as sublime as ever. Fact is, these other smells just seemed to give it a better hold, and my, how rich it was. I didn't make these reflections there wasn't time made them on the platform. And breaking for the platform, Thompson got suffocated and fell, and before I got him dragged out, which I did by the collar, I was mighty near gone myself. When we revived, Thompson said dejectedly, "We got to stay out here, Cap. We got to do it. They ain't no other way. The governor wants to travel alone, and he's fixed, so he can outvote us." And presently he added, "And don't you know, we're pisoned. It's our last trip, you can make up your mind to it. Typhoid fever is what's going to come of this. I feel it a-coming right now. Yes, sir, we're elected, just as sure as you're born." We were taken from the platform an hour later, frozen and insensible, at the next station, and I went straight off into a virulent fever, and never knew anything again for 3 weeks. I found out, then, that I had spent that awful night with a harmless box of rifles, and a lot of innocent cheese, but the news was too late to save me. Imagination had done its work, and my health was permanently shattered. Neither Bermuda nor any other land can ever bring it back home. This is my last trip. I am on my way home to die. End of this Project Gutenberg text, of How Tell a Story and Others by Mark Twain. MTHTS by Gutenberg Edition.